This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. This is your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, and along with my co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchik, who is in studio with me today.
Good morning.
Good morning. We come to you every week to discuss the topics that doctors discuss amongst themselves in every topic in healthcare imaginable in doctors' lounges all across the country. And we let you in on those private conversations so that you'll be armed with the information that you'll need to fight for your healthcare freedom. Our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is a non-for-profit tax-deductible organization founded by doctors who are deeply concerned with the direction that healthcare is going in. The foundation offers solutions that are very different than those that have been enacted by bureaucrats in Washington who believe that they know better than you do the kind of healthcare that you should have, who should deliver it to you, and where. The foundation is fighting for healthcare freedom for all Americans, trying to preserve the doctor-patient relationship, and that's very much in jeopardy right now. So you need to support the foundation, which brings you this show, which I think is really important in helping to talk to America about the healthcare issues. Very few people are doing that. So go to the website, docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's docs, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. And please contribute generously to this non-for-profit foundation so that we can continue to do our work. Well, I have a double pleasure today of having not only my co-host with me, which is very unusual because we both have very busy practices, and it's a lot to do the show, which we love doing, but it takes time away from our busy clinical practices, so we split up the duties. But you know, it's always great to be together. It changes the entire show.
It does, and I appreciate you letting me come on when it's Hal's turn to have the microphone all to himself. So I'm going to try and behave myself and yak a little less than usual. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm grateful that you let me come on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and we wanted Mike to come in studio. He wanted to come into studio because my other pleasure and privilege is to have our guest on today, who is a physician that I have known for probably about 30 years. He does what I do. He's a pediatric urologist right next door in Mobile, Alabama, and his name is Dr. Jeff Terry. Jeff has been fighting a fight that needs to be fought, trying to stop the random implementation of a coding system which is going to turn healthcare on its heels, upside down. I won't go into a big soliloquy about this. I'll let Dr. Terry develop it. But Mike has been following this issue probably a lot more closely than I have, and he wanted in on this discussion. Dr. Terry is a practicing urologist. He's been in private practice for years. He has represented this issue in the Medical Alabama Urologic Association Society, the American Urologic Association, the Medical Association of the State of Alabama, and he's worked under the umbrella of the AMA, fighting the fight for physicians and patients to try to get some sort of semblance of sense into ICD-10. So let me stop talking and bring our guest, special guest, into the show, into the Doctor's Lounge. Good morning, Jeff.
Well, good morning, Hal and Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you guys.
So let me just get started and ask you a question, Jeff. What is ICD-10, and why is this such an important issue?
Well, I understand there are lots of different folks that listen to your show, so I think we should start off simple and then work our way up. And, you know, ICD stands for the International Classification of Diseases, and it's a system of diagnostic codes for reporting disease, identifying global health trends, and collecting global statistics. And even doctors get confused about the difference between the ICD code and the CPT code. And as I said, ICD is, it was developed by the World Health Organization, and it was only developed for statistics and epidemiological data. It was not developed to be used in the billing process within healthcare. It's used by most all countries around the world. The United States is the only country that uses it within the billing process, which presents a problem for physicians when they're trying to take care of their patients. We're not going to talk much about CPT, but people need to understand that the CPT code is what we use to charge patients. That is part of the billing process, and that's a completely different coding system, and it is owned by the American Medical Association. And so, actually, it's funny. The ICD code for physicians, it doesn't have to do with how we get paid. It has to do with how we do not get paid, because if the doctor doesn't code right, then he doesn't get paid for his services. And in the long run, with this new ICD-10 system, it can affect physicians even staying in business, which affects patient care tremendously. And I have doctors in Mobile that are retiring and not going to do this new coding system. And for every doctor that we lose, there's 2,000 patients that are having to look for a new doctor. So,
but even for each doctor that retires, the impact on the ability to deliver health care, it is expensive to train a doctor. And the cost to the system is just astronomical every time that a doctor in his or her prime decides to hang it up.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we're having doctors in their 60s decide to hang it up. In fact, at the recent ANA meeting I just got back from in Chicago, I had a friend in Texas that told me there's a group of, I want to say, 5 or 6 physicians, I believe, in Austin, Texas, and they're just planning on retiring and hanging it up on October the 1st. And the important thing about October the 1st is that's the day of implementation for the new ICD system. We are presently working under ICD version number 9, and the new system will be version number 10. And that's what we're discussing today.
Well, there's a little bit of deception in labeling there, I think, Jeff, isn't there? Because if you have a system that's labeled as its 9th version and you're going to something that's labeled as the 10th version, the implication is that the 10th version is sort of a natural extension of 9, a successor of 9, something that is based on 9. But that's not really true, is it?
Well, it's true in some ways and maybe not in others. And, you know, ICD-10 was designed probably over 12 or 13 years ago, and most of the world accepted it. But most of the world accepted was just the basic ICD-10, which covered about 16,000 or 17,000 diagnoses. The United States has what we call ICD-10-CM. It's our clinical modification. And the number of codes goes up to 70,000. And no other country has done that. So it's very different as far as the number of codes, because ICD-9 only has about 16,000 codes. So we're going up fivefold on the number of codes, which is part of the problem, one of the parts.
I know that you've studied this a lot, Jeff. You've done more work than almost any physician in the country trying to beat this back. And just for people who are listening, could you just share a few of the ridiculous new codes that are part of this system? And the old system, and part of the argument was that they were not specific enough, people who are tracking data couldn't track it because it was very nonspecific. Just share the ridiculousness of some of these new codes with the audience.
Well, I can share a few. They're really a lot, and I've tried, to be honest with you, I've tried not to go down that road. I'm trying to talk about the real, you know, benefits or non-benefits. But some of the codes, you know, there's one, there's a code for getting, for catching on fire while you're water skiing. There's a code for running into a lamppost, but and running into a lamppost a second time like you didn't learn the first time. There's a code that I really like of being bitten by an orca whale, and then there's one for being bitten by the orca whale a second time, and I like to say Jonah didn't get a second time.
Good point.
There, I was flying back from Washington a few weeks ago, and it dawned on me that ICD-10 is incomplete because they do not have a code for falling out of an airplane. And I was thinking we need a code for falling out of an airplane, and then we could go out to the seventh digit, the specificity, and it could be, well, if there were clouds to buffer your fall or no clouds.
That's ICD-11.
That's really how ridiculous it is. There, in the new ICD-10 system, there are 250 codes for diabetes alone. And a doctor doing his best to code correctly can honestly code differently on different days when he tries to figure out the 250 codes. Mm-hmm. And if your codes don't match up, you don't get paid. So that's the absurdity of the whole system. It's one thing to just have codes for statistics and to try to figure out, you know, statistical trends across the world. But it's another thing when they couple that code to how you get paid. And then the government, whether it's CMS or if it's private payers like Blue Cross, they use that as a way of not paying physicians.
Well, my impression is that there's a lot of confusion about how specific that you have to get. I mean, I was training a new doc yesterday that's joining our practice who's already in Atlanta and is experienced with EMR, and I was showing her our EMR, and she's a pediatric otolaryngologist, actually. I bet you know her. And so, of course, the conversation goes to ICD-10. You know, how can you avoid that? And I was explaining to her that in my specialty, you know, I'm stuck here with a couple of urologists. I'm the lone ENT in the group here. But that middle ear infections, right, common diagnosis for pediatric otolaryngologists, that, you know, every single middle ear infection blows up to four diagnoses in ICD-10 because you have left side, right side, both sides. And
acute
unspecified.
And chronic.
Acute. Yeah, well, acute and chronic's been there. That's okay. We're used to acute and chronic, but you got, you know, left side, right side, both sides, neither side. And so, you know, that's why she was asking me, isn't there a way just to one-to-one match? Well, doesn't every ICD-9 have a new ICD-10? And that's not true. And there's a question of how granular you have to get.
Right. And the problem is, you know, the doctors, you know, it's in our nature. We want to be specific. We want to be accurate. So you'll spend all this time going through your computer trying to be as specific as you can, and you're going to rely on your EMR and what's programmed in the EMR to give you all that specificity. But to answer your question, how specific do you have to get? Only the insurance company knows that. You know, they have their computers are designed to pay you only for certain codes. And they won't tell you. It's all a secret. So from a doctor's standpoint, it's a guessing game about how specific do you have to get paid.
Yeah, wow.
And you don't want your physician concentrating on a code.
No.
You want your physician concentrating on your individual healthcare problem. The coding should be something that you do at the very end of the patient encounter and should not be a big deal.
And
right now, it's the most important thing we do.
Right.
It's what we devote all of our energy and our time to.
Jeff, we're at a heartbreak.
For most physicians.
Yeah, we're at a heartbreak right now, but we're going to get back to the whys in just a second. You're in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship.
I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak, co-host of The Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. Please join us in the fight to save the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper and go to this website, www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on americaswebradio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on americaswebradio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge. I'm your host, Dr. Hal Schurz, along with my co-host,
Dr. Mike Karuchak. Good morning.
And we are talking about ICD-10 and the new coding system that the government is trying to foist upon America, and with our special guest, Dr. Jeff Terry, who's one of the foremost experts in this field. So, Jeff, we were talking about, just to pick up where we left off, how doctors should be concentrating more on taking care of patients rather than being a data entry clerk.
That's exactly right. And ICD-10 is sort of the tip of the iceberg, or so to speak. I refer to it as the final nail in the coffin for many physicians' practices because of all the other government mandates. The electronic medical record, which some physicians are just now implementing that. Some physicians are on their third EMR system because they just like the other two.
Yeah,
and
you got that right.
Says you just not only have to have an EMR, but you have to do it the way the government says to do it, or they don't pay you. So all the meaningful use criteria, the quality reporting, and then you tack on ICD-10 on top of that, the patient is no longer the center of the healthcare equation. The patient is being moved out of the healthcare equation. And when I talk to congressmen, when I go to Washington, I basically tell them, I say, next time you go to the doctor, you look at your doctor's eyes and see where he's focused. He's not focused on you, the patient. He's focused on the computer. And it's sad. When I testified in front of the Health Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce, during part of my testimony, I turned my back to the committee and pretended like I was typing on a computer. And I told them, this is how I relate to my patients. My back is to the patient, and I'm concentrating on the computer. And that's what's driving a lot of physicians to retirement, because it's just not what we went into this profession to do.
What was that? What was their response when you did that?
Not much of one, pal. I respect people who serve in Congress, especially the physicians, because they've sacrificed a lot. You and I know how much we love the practice of medicine, but to go to Congress, it's just a different environment. And when I testified, the chairman of the committee and the ranking Democratic member had opening statements, and their statements were that it's time to implement ICD-10, and they based that on untrue facts. And it was obvious to me that we had failed to educate our congresspeople, and whether you want to say it's their fault or not, I think it's our fault for not educating them. And I like to say Congress has no clue what we do, but that's not a criticism, because we have no clue what they do. They need to rely more on physicians. Right now, this whole argument and debate is being pushed by people who are benefiting from ICD-10 financially, tremendously. The American Health Information Management Association, AHIMA, and all the coders, and they provide a very good service for us, but they'll make millions of dollars off of this system that is not going to help improve patient care. And the American Hospital Association is pushing it. They think they'll make more money, and it's off the backs of the patients and the physicians who are going to suffer from it, and our healthcare system is going to suffer unless somehow we change how it's going to be implemented.
Well, Jeff, I watched your testimony. I watched almost every second of those hearings, some two or three times. And I was impressed. I thought the whole thing was just kind of a rubber stamp act, and I was impressed, just like you mentioned, that before the first witness uttered the first word, that two congressmen who were running the proceedings basically got up and said, we're done with this. It's a done deal. We're going to do it. And so the rest of it was just kind of a
window
rubber
dressing.
Stamp exercise.
You're exactly right. And it was a lot of work and time and financial for me to go to Washington to testify, and I felt like it was a total waste of time on my part.
And that's really sad because, you know, we are told the dozen or more times, that probably almost two dozen times that I've been to Washington, how much they rely on people like us coming there. And, you know, and I'm getting cynical. It's taken me this long to get cynical, but I'm really at the point where I really think it doesn't matter. And I think you hit the nail on the head, Jeff, when you said that when you discussed the special interests that are set to profit from conversion to this system. And I think that the people in Washington know exactly what's going on, and they have been co-opted by these special interests who are spending a tremendous amount of money to try to get their way, and we're just pawns in the system. We don't have organization. We don't have any real clout behind us. We're just out there trying to get them to do the right thing, and I think that's wishful thinking.
I agree, and it's politics, you know, and I like to say physicians don't make good politicians. I think that's true because politics is the art of compromise, and physicians that's not in our DNA, our human nature. We do not like to compromise in the care of our patients. We know what's the right thing to do, and it's tough. And right now in the ICD-10 debate, we are compromising tremendously. You know, as I mentioned, I came back from the AMA meeting last week, and, you know, the AMA doesn't represent all physicians. There are a lot of other fine docs around the country, but it is the biggest organization that we have, and even though with all of its imperfections, I think it does more good than bad. But I will read you a comment that I put together that summarizes where we stand in organized medicine. And it says the following, that even though the American Medical Association is firm in its view that a switch to ICD-10 is a mistake, we believe that. For the reasons I've told you, it's not going to help patient care. We believe it's a mistake, but we also recognize there are other groups who are fighting to maintain the October the 1st implementation date. And our compromise is, in order to maintain the patient's access to care, in order to maintain and protect physicians' practices, then we agree to implement ICD-10 on October the 1st if CMS and Congress will give us a grace period or a transition period for 2 years. And people get confused about what we mean. That does not mean that you can continue to code in ICD-9. It means you have to make the switch. And you'll do the best you can to code, but you will not be penalized financially if you get the code wrong. And CMS will not come back a year later and review your records and say you got the code wrong and we're taking your money back for services you've already provided. And doctors won't go out of business, and patients will keep their doctors, basically. So that's our compromise. And it pains me to push this compromise, but it's politics. And I guess I've been in this long enough that I am somewhat political now.
Yeah. So does that mean that in that compromise that physicians would submit an ICD-9 and 10 code?
No. ICD-9 is going away now. The law will say you have to code an ICD-9 up to the last day in September. And then starting the first day in October, it has to be ICD-10. Now, you know, you'll see a patient. I didn't say that exactly right. If you see the patient in September, it has to be an ICD-9 code. Now, you may not submit your bill until December. That's foolish. You should submit your bill right away. But any care that you give before October the 1st, has to be coded in ICD-9, so the computers will have to manage 9 and 10 for 6 months or a year or whatever, but there will be no new ICD-9 codes coming into the system after October the 1st.
But it's based on, the cutoff date is based on the date of service, the date that you see the patient, not the day that you submit the code, true?
Correct.
Okay.
So, and this is getting in the weeds, but I'm just curious. So, you know, many doctors have medical claims that are in dispute that get resubmitted or are
appealed.
They're in limbo.
Yeah.
And if they're in the old ICD-9 system, they stay in the ICD-9 system because the service was rendered before October 1st.
That's correct. That's why the computers are going to have to do both for probably a year because of the appeal process and all that stuff.
Wow, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, really. sounds cut and dry to me.
CMS is telling Congress that they're all ready to go. They're doing this end-to-end testing, and they say they're all ready to go. But if you look at past history, what happened with the Affordable Care Act when the exchanges came online, and interesting enough, that was October the 1st, 2013.
Yes.
That was the original date that ICD-10 was supposed to happen. What would have happened if we changed to ICD-10 and did the exchanges all on that one day? There wouldn't be a medical profession anymore, I would say. But
well, I wonder if that's not going to happen even without healthcare.gov muddying the waters, because, I mean, I could easily see a situation where, you know, we're in the third week of October and nobody's had claims paid in 3 weeks because there's so much confusion on both sides of the code transmission.
Well, that's exactly what Jeff is saying.
Yeah.
People are gonna not be able to pay their bills. You know, I know that Mike and I co-authored a piece in Town Hall that you've read, Jeff, and that's exactly one of the fears that doctors who are barely hanging on are going to have to close their doors or sell their practices to hospitals, which, you know, that's why the American Hospital Association is firmly behind this.
Of course.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, CMS is telling Congress that they're ready, but kind of privately we hear that they are concerned about October the 1st. So I would hope that if we can educate Congress in the next 3 months about what's happening, that we can develop this grace period, and I would think that CMS would appreciate that. It would get them off the hook, so to speak, if things didn't go just right. You know, they have told physicians. On one hand, they say it's going to work, but on the other hand, they tell physicians that you need a 4 or 5 month money saved to keep your practice going for 4 or 5 months. Now, nobody has enough money to keep their practice going for 4 or 5 months. We don't have savings that much, but
no.
They say
no.
That's what it's going to take to weather the transition. So they're admitting up front that they're going to be problems.
You know, we have 1 minute till our break, Jeff, but our producer, David Moxley, wants to know where the patients are in this mess.
The patients have no clue. Just like many of the small rural physicians in this country have no clue, and I'll pick up on that after the next break, but the patients are not in this that I know of anywhere.
Wow, that is just absolutely frightening, and I think the worst is still to come. So we'll get into that in the next segment in the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Have you ever wondered what doctors talk about amongst themselves? If you do, join us on the Doctor's Lounge and hear the doctors' conversations amongst themselves. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning, 8 to 9 a.m.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Doctor's Lounge with Dr. Michael Karuchak and myself, Dr. Hal Schurz, and our special guest, Dr. Jeff Terry, talking about this horrific ICD-10 system that is almost upon us. So, Jeff, we've got Mike through this one segment, and he wants to cover a couple of things, but we'll get into the patients the end of this segment or the beginning and next. So, Mike, go ahead.
Okay. So, Jeff, I was just, like I said, I had watched almost all of the testimony, replaying it through my computer after the fact, and sort of examined some of the testimony from some of these other witnesses at length. I mean, of the seven witnesses, you were the only one that was making any sense and really talking about a couple of points, one of which was that all of the supposed benefits, all of the people who support ICD-10 are citing as good things that are supposed to happen with ICD-10, none of those things have ever been demonstrated. And you in your testimony sort of, politely sort of referred to that. I felt like you were having to hold back because of the circumstances. But can you talk about some of those empty promises that come from ICD-10, some of these wonderful things that they say will happen but really have never been proven?
You're exactly correct, Mike. I can kind of go over a few of them. And in fact, about once every other week, I get an email from CMS promoting all these good things about ICD-10. They say that since there are more codes, that it will improve health care, we'll be able to code better, and it's going to improve health care. I mean, that's utterly ridiculous, as most physicians know, that we don't treat patients based on a code. That's the last thing we do in our patient encounter. But that's one of the major reasons they give. The other major reason that the committee chairman said is we're the last major industrialized nation to change to ICD-10. But they fail to tell you that we're the only country that will use all 70 or 80,000 codes. We're the only country that couples the code to the billing process. We're the only country that uses it in the outpatient setting. And we're the only country that puts the cost on the shoulders of physicians and patients. They don't tell you the specifics. They say there'll be a smooth transition, which is, we've just talked about, if you have any common sense, you understand that will not be the case.
Jeff, you sound like an ICD-10 denier. 97% of people in healthcare believe that ICD-10 is a good thing.
Where do you get that statistic?
Not just like all the other ones they have, just made it up.
Yeah.
no big deal, right? We just sort of, hallucinate that the public demands quality measurement and increased maintenance of certification and all these other sorts of things. But it just blew my mind listening to this. And it was, some things really stand out. I mean, the testimony of Christy Matus, who was representing Athena Health, I thought that, that whole testimony was nothing but a giant infomercial for Athena Health's EMR products, and that, this whole ICD-10 thing is nothing more than sort of meaningful use chapter two. In terms of, forcing people to get into EMRs or buy their, have their practices sold to hospitals. And this argument that she made about, ICD-10 just being a fancier dictionary for diagnoses. Do you remember her talking about that, or was there any more?
Oh, yes. That's an argument to say, what's the big deal? It's just a fancier dictionary. But the big deal is trying to find the appropriate code. The big deal is how it affects how they couple it to the payment mechanism. It's a real big deal. Not for somebody sitting behind a computer, but for a doctor who's trying to take care of a patient, it's a big deal. The other thing they like to say, CMS, and they always finish their argument that we want to work together to realize the benefits of ICD-10 to the ultimate goal of improving the quality and affordability of health care for all Americans. And I just gag when I read that, because maybe that's our goal, but ICD-10 will not accomplish it, and it may actually make affordability worse, access to physicians harder, since there'll be fewer physicians, and their productivity will be less. We did some conservative numbers. There will be 1.5 million patients a day seen less, fewer patients seen per day, 1.5 million. Are conservative numbers once ICD-10 starts, because physicians will have to cut back on how many patients they see. And that equals about $30 billion a year in savings to CMS and insurance companies.
So it's rationing by a back door.
The government says this is going to save them money.
Covert rationing.
Yeah.
It's rationing. It really is. Just like the electronic medical record. I don't know about you guys, but when we instituted our EMR,
yeah,
I cut back the number of patients I see per day by 50% for over a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's a huge financial hit. I mean, people don't get that.
No.
That, you know, doctors, you know, we have a lot in common with plumbers and hairdressers and everything else because, you know, if we're not under a sink fixing a leak, especially the urologist.
I was wondering where that was going.
I just kind of tripped over that. You know, there's no money coming in and the overhead's all still there. We're paying rent and payroll and malpractice and all that stuff. And for you to, you know, I mean, that's a five-figure hit to your practice to go half speed for a month.
Oh, you have no idea the hits that have happened because of government mandates, government implementation of rules that have no bearing on healthcare, but it's capricious government regulation that have, you know, impacted the income of every physician in this country and reduced the accessibility of physicians to of patients, physicians, yeah, and patients, but you know, talking about the amount of time that this is going to take to work through, Jeff. I know that you've talked to the Physicians Foundation. Physicians Foundation is a nonprofit. An organization that looks out for physicians and patients. It came out of the settlement against the insurance companies when they were price fixing and holding back reimbursement to physicians. For those in the audience who are unfamiliar with this organization, the Physicians Foundation does very good work, and one of their projects is ICD-10, and they had a medical student here in Georgia by the name of Parth Neetan. His dad is an internist. He's a first year medical student at Mercer University, and he's a software geek, and he created an ICD-10 patch. You're familiar with that, right, Jeff?
Right. The president of the foundation gave a report last week, and he discussed that, and it's neat. But again, you know, and the ICD proponents say there are things on the internet you can click on, and it'll give you a crosswalk. But I can talk more about crosswalks, which is what this will do. But if it's not somehow built into your EMR, I mean, are we going to stop and then get on the internet and do a crosswalk to do our coding at the end of our patient encounter?
No.
I mean, I'm still not so sure how that's going to work.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. There's most of your 1.5 million patient visits a day right there.
Wow. So what about patients, Jeff? We started to talk about that in the last segment about the people in rural America who don't have a clue what's going to happen to them. What do you see happening on the path we're heading?
Well, I don't want to be pessimistic, but I like to tell a story. You know, I'm down in Mobile, but I share grandchildren with a primary care doctor in rural Alabama, and so I'm real in touch with rural America and what happens. And, you know, there are physicians in this country who don't, there some weeks they don't even take a paycheck. You know, the money coming in pays their staff and their overhead, and they're in this profession for the love of patients, and it's sad when that happens to me, and when, you know, they don't have a buffer to get through this transition. And they're, you know, patients, believe it or not, still pay with chickens and corn and things other than money in rural America. And when these physicians can't pay their staff anymore, you know, ICD-10, this is not just Medicare. This is Medicare, Blue Cross, UnitedHealthcare, Aetna, Medicaid. It's every insurance. And so if you can't make this transition, then your income goes to zero. And that's a pretty big penalty to pay for a coding system that's not going to help in the care of your patient. And, you know, I was at the big American urology meeting in New Orleans a month ago, and there is a pediatric urologist, Hal, I won't say his name, but he's like the top pediatric urologist in the world. He's in Texas. He's a close friend of mine, and I asked him, I said, well, what are you doing about ICD-10? And he looked at me and said, well, we're going to work on that this summer. Well, yeah. I said, I just kind of shook my head because all of the experts say it takes a year to get ready for it, a year to prepare for this transition. So if you hadn't started getting ready, you're not going to be able to succeed in the new ICD-10 era. And I like to tell people, it's like, you know, Congress, one of the things that Congress said was, well, doctor, you've had 2 years to get ready for this. And I like to say, well, you could pass a law saying all physicians have to run a 5-minute mile, but I'm going to give you 2 years to do it. Well, there's some things you just can't do. Or I want you to learn to fly an airplane, but you got to learn by reading a book. And then on October the 1st, I'm going to put you in the cockpit with 200 passengers on board, and you're going to take off.
Right.
Without a dry run or any practice. And that's what they're doing to us with this one-day implementation of ICD-10, and that's why we need a transition period, because you can't learn it until you work with it.
So
there was a famous politician, I think Nancy Pelosi, said you have to pass the bill to know what's in it.
Oh, yes.
Well, I would say you have to implement ICD-10 before you know how bad it's going to hurt you and how bad it's going to affect the patients. But again, common sense tells you, and I don't know how much common sense politics trumps common sense in Washington. That's all I'll say about that.
Well, you're 100% right. So there are people who get their health care through concierge doctors, direct primary care, which the Docs for Patient Care Foundation has been pushing and solidly behind. We've talked on this show numbers of times. There are other plans, the Liberty health share plans. Are these? I would suppose that these different alternative ways of getting care that are not through traditional third party payers are not really participating in ICD-10. Is that correct or incorrect?
That's correct. And as you and I know, we need more. The patient needs to be more involved in the healthcare as far as paying bills and knowing what the cost is, and we need free market economic principles more involved. That's another subject. But this, they are not. If you're not accepting any kind of an insurance, then ICD-10 doesn't affect you at
yes.
all. And there have been some physicians that have said they want to go to that type of practice on October the 1st. But
right.
I have told them, you can't. If you're in Medicare, you just can't switch on one day.
No.
Medicare has certain rules about when you can get in and out of Medicare. If you have a contract with Blue Cross, you can't just charge, you know, take Blue Cross one day and then not the next.
No.
You're under contract. So if you're going to do that, you have to look at all your contracts, look at your Medicare contract, and figure out how to get out of those contracts, because you can't do it all in one day, and you may find that you go without payment for 6 months.
Right. But, you know, I think that that's really where I was going with this, which is that the third-party payer system is really why we're dealing with all this. And we're coming to the hard break right now, so we're going to finish that and develop it further in the last segment on the Doctor's Lounge in America's Web Radio.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your healthcare freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's www.docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
The Docs for Patient Care Foundation is your way to join the fight and become a member of an organization created by doctors for patients, dedicated to fighting for your health care freedom and preserving the doctor-patient relationship. Get a pen and paper. Write down docsforpatientcarefoundation.org. That's D-O-C-S, the number 4, patientcarefoundation.org. Go to our site and please make a generous tax-deductible donation and join the fight today. Thank you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And we're back for our final segment in the Doctor's Lounge. My co-host, Dr. Michael Karuchek, had to get back to his busy medical practice, so he just departed, and I'll take you home in the last segment. So, the third party payer system, Jeff, I think is really what is behind all of this regulation that doctors have to endure.
You're right, and it's third party meaning the government and meaning private insurers, and you know it's partly our fault, Hal, that we've let things get like this. Physicians are not concentrating on, you know, insurance and payment. We're concentrating on taking care of the patient. I remember when I went to medical school, I always thought, well, if I'm a doctor, I won't have to worry about income, but that'll just be there. I'll just take care of my patients. But by not worried about the business part that much, we're in this situation where we're under the control of other people, and it's bad for the patient. It really is when they, you know, healthcare costs are going up, and the system is just broken. But it's I don't know. It'll take another generation to fix it. I feel like, you know, it's got to get a little worse, and it's got to break a little more before people wake up.
Well, you're right. We've unfortunately let the foxes guard the hen house, and the foxes being the interests that want greedily a bigger part of the $3 trillion annual healthcare industry pot of gold. And that's not what physicians are in it for, but that's what all the other interests are in it for. And so, you know, we're unfortunately the low man on the totem pole because we've got the least amount of financial power behind us to influence the what happens out of Washington. But as so many physician activists that I talk to say, we really have the power, and we don't realize it, because if we say we're not going to take care of your patients, or we're not going to, and I'm not saying to do this, but don't misunderstand.
That's the problem.
Right.
Can't do it. I mean, we're not going to do it.
Right. But without us, there's no health care. And
right. And you think about it, too. The laws in our country are stacked against us, because as soon as we try to organize from a business standpoint, we're in violation of antitrust laws, where
right.
The insurance companies can do that all day long, but as soon as we do, then we're taken to court, and that's a problem.
Well, what we need to really have is the citizenry behind us. We need to have business behind us. Those are the interests that will overcome the insurance companies and the hospital interests and the information technology interests, the malpractice attorney interests. And I'm going to ask you a question that I ask a lot of people. Where do you see us going in terms of healthcare in this country?
Oh, well, I mean, there are more and more physicians now becoming employed physicians, employed by hospital systems or other things, and it concerns me that sometimes their allegiance may not be to the patient, but may be to their employer. And I think private practice medicine is still the way to go, but but I'm also in favor of plurality, because you know, not everything is, there's not one answer. There's not one way to skin a cat. So I think some doctors work better in an employed situation than others, but it has to be where the I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but the doctor needs to be in control, not for control reasons, but the doctor knows best how to take care of the patient. I'm told every day in the operating room, as I know you all, well, doctor, you have to do this, you have to do that, and I say, that doesn't make sense. I thought I was in control here, and the answer is no. So where are we going? I don't know. I'm at the age where I'm now becoming a patient in the system, and I'm seeing it on the other side of the aisle. And
yes.
It's frustrating sometimes. When I go to my doctor and I have to sign all this HIPAA stuff, it's like the HIPAA Privacy Act is new to doctors. That's part of our creed, our oath when we became physicians. We've had our own internal HIPAA laws forever, but now, you know, when I sign that piece of paper, I just throw it in the garbage, but... You know, the actual taking care of patients is getting the back seat. It's all the other stuff. So where are we going? I don't know. I think it's going to take a complete restructuring of the laws in this country to allow doctors to get back to the business of health care. But I don't see that happening for you and me in our practices.
I think my personal opinion, and I'll take the liberty to inject my personal opinion, I think that we're heading toward what they have in England. I think we're going to a two-tier system where you're going to get a government-run system, which should come as to surprise of no one, is being favored by people in Washington. I was shocked, actually, to learn that it doesn't matter what letter you have behind your name. The overwhelming opinion of people who are sitting in Congress is that private practice is bad, that fee-for-service medicine is bad, that a single payer is good. And so things that we're seeing happen are all geared toward marching down that road. So I see that system is inevitable. But I also see a system where there will be physicians, unless it becomes against the law like it was once in Canada, physicians being able to provide health care for people who don't want any part of that system. And so I see us becoming more like England.
Well, I hope not, but I can't disagree with your assessment. You know, I like to say, I make a comment to get people's attention, and I like to say that we do need rationing in health care. Now, but then I get their attention when I say that, but then I say rationing should be done between the physician and the patient and their families to do the right thing for the right reason, not rationing by the government.
Right.
And, you know, think of where we are today, Hal. Our healthcare system is the best in the world. The things we do in our healthcare system are just unbelievable. And we did not get here with government-run healthcare. We got here by doctors taking care of patients, basically in private practice, a fee-for-service model. And guess what? The poor people got taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
The other statement I like to make is healthcare is not a right in this country. But in a civilized society, it's our ethical duty to take care of those who need care. But we should not base our whole system on that. And physicians have always done that. But, you know, when you base your system on that, then things implode, and your system is not based on the appropriate structural things. It's like building a skyscraper, and instead of starting with the foundation and building up, you try to start building the skyscraper from the top down. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
That's what's happening with our healthcare system.
No, absolutely right. So we're coming close to the end of our hour, believe it or not. It just time flies by. So let's bring this full circle back to the ICD-10. So, Jeff, people may not even be aware of what's going on. I would say that most people aren't aware. The people who are listening to this show, if they want to find out more about what this means and how this is going to impact them, first, how can they do it? And number two, shouldn't they call their congressman and tell them that this is going to impact on their ability to retain their doctors?
It's it's simple. If you're a physician or a patient, you need to let your congressman know and your senator that you're very concerned about the new coding system, because you already see that your doctor is not concentrating on your care anymore because of the electronic medical record, and the coding system will make it worse. That's, you know, the individual patient and most individual physicians aren't going to be able to offer a solution, but if the more Congress hears from their constituents, the more they will understand. And we're doing our best in these last 3 months before October the 1st to teach Congress. There's some legislation in Congress that will help us, but legislation doesn't get passed very easily. So Congress can ask CMS to give physicians a grace period, a transition period. It's the right thing to do. It's the only thing. It's a win-win situation. The people who are going to benefit from ICD-10 will get to implement their product on October the 1st, and the physicians will continue to be able to take care of their patients. But the more patients and physicians that actually call or write their congressman, it would be a benefit, mainly to patients, secondarily to physicians, and third to our profession.
Is there a bill assigned to the to this grace period extension that they're proposing?
There are two bills primarily, and the one I'm in favor of is H.R. 2652 by Congressman Gary Palmer from Alabama.
1 minute, Jeff.
And then there's H.R. 2247, Diane Black of Tennessee. They will both accomplish what we want.
Okay.
And so there are two bills in Congress, but all we have to do is tell Congress to please help the physicians and patients.
So, Jeff, I'm going to ask you to hold on after we're finished with the show. Our producer wants a word. But so if you're a physician out there, talk to your patients. Tell them to call Congress and stop this madness so that we can be able to stay in business and take care of you. And if you're not a doctor, if you're a citizen, you're going to be a patient. So Get on the stick and do this. Jeff, it was a privilege and an honor having you here on the show today. Thank you, and hopefully we'll get this passed.
Well, it was a privilege for me too, Hal. I appreciate everything that you're doing for our profession.
Well, thank you, and thanks everyone for listening to the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio.
This is America's Web Radio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.